Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Time now for Ken and Curtis with Ken Laird and Chris Curtis on WEEI.
Yes, indeed. Who says Chris Sale is not pitching the opener? This is the de facto home opener, Curtis. It's our opener at the famous Ford Clubhouse Fenway Studio on Lansdowne Street. You and I get the guinea pig shift every year to make sure everything works in here.
Right.
And that we don't sound like we're in a tin can. So that will be determined over the next 3 hours.
You sound great, as always. It is really loud for me, and my thing is not controlling it. But anyway, we'll figure it out. Today...
Wrong one. You can use the one on your right. That's the problem.
I'm an idiot.
Early.
Already.
Well, you got to get here early. You just strolled in 2 minutes before the show.
Hey, if anybody's heading to Fenway or anywhere, Storrow Drive is closed until 11 a.m.
Oh, is it really? Wow.
They're filming a Matt Damon movie. There is not a single sign departing South Boston onto 93 or anywhere that would inform someone who would be driving to Storrow Drive that Storrow is closed, which would preclude people from getting into a massive bottleneck by Charles Street and Mass General Hospital. So if you are driving anywhere, PSA, they closed Storrow Drive so Matt Damon could film a movie. I'm sure it's going to be great, but it's not an April Fool's joke. Storrow Drive is closed.
Okay, public service announcement. No worries. We'll have you entertained until 11 at least, maybe 11:30. That's our goal. We are on the air until 1. When Arcan takes over. And, of course, we have Red Sox baseball. But we are live from the Ford Clubhouse Fenway Studio, Curtis. And it's brought to you by your New England Ford dealers. They are celebrating Truck Month, featuring F-Series, America's best-selling trucks for 46 years. Get great deals on trucks in stock and ready for immediate delivery right now. Now, big things happening this week, obviously, in Patriots land, which we'll get to. And even the Red Sox had the big opener, and Sale goes today, which is obviously huge. Quickly, though, the biggest news of all in the sports landscape this week, I don't know if I trust it, but it might have come from your show. Did Greg get actual solid reporting that Bergeron and Krejci are done after this year?
Yeah, Greg is nothing if not impeccably timed with his reports because he just drops them. He doesn't mention them before the show. And then at some point, I think it was in the 6 o'clock hour yesterday, he threw out there that he ran into Thornton, who was part of the bizarre first pitch ceremony on the opening day. And Thornton volunteered the information, wasn't saying don't use this. It wasn't like his barber with Grizzlick or whatever else. And Sean Thornton said that he was told. Sean Thornton now is in the front office of the Florida Panthers. And
he's the enemy.
Right. And he was told that Krejci and Bergeron are done after this year, and they've let people know it. So, win just one for the Gipper.
That is huge. With as invested as people are in this Bruins team now, which have set a franchise record and all the rest, the President's Trophy winners, for this to now be announced, even on the sly, which I guess it hasn't been. I mean, I don't know if this, what do you put 80% stock in this, 70%?
I think that it's a good story, but if they lose, say, in the conference final, then if they win it all, I believe that Thornton will be proven prescient and that Greg Scoop will be right, that they'll leave and go, Krejci will go back home to the Czech Republic and Bergeron will go up to Canada and everybody will be, walking away. But it doesn't seem crazy, right? I mean, everybody came back. They got the buy-in. Bergeron said, okay, we'll bring in a coach that you guys like. We'll get a guy that's not going to, be hard on DeBrusque or Carlo. And it's been... Of all the things that have happened in the last year in Boston sports, the resurrection of the Bruins into the best team in franchise history.
Right.
Think about where we were. I think it was the Beachcomber last Greg Hill roadshow, and the vitriol in the direction of Sweeney after the Cassidy firing. To a man, every beat writer was condemning the move, most points in the NHL over the last 6 years. Fast forward to the fall, and Mitch Miller is signed. and it was Don Sweeney needs to be the 25th Amendment used against him. He is not fit to serve as general manager of the Boston Bruins. And now he's Sweeney's, and they are by far and away the best story in Boston without a close second.
Yeah, and Linus Ullmark has 37 wins, three away from the franchise goalie record. The Pete Peters, the immortal Pete Peters goalie record. Of all
another
things,
stroke of Sweeney's.
Yep, thank you very much, Sean. And Pastrnak has 53 goals, 99 points.
Oh, not to mention they got him on a team-friendly eight-year deal in the middle of the season.
Right.
Is goalie Bob the most underrated assistant coach in Boston history?
Right there by Renicki when he was bench coach.
Oh, Renicki, who could forget? Weekend at Renicki's.
He had a great run as bench coach.
Rod Renicki?
Yeah.
Has he ever said a word? Well, who speaks more on the sideline, Caldwell or Renicki?
He was part of the World Championship team, wasn't he not?
I mean, so was Brad Mills.
Well, you said underrated. I'm just telling you, there's one.
But what was his skill? Asenza's got the best goalie every year in Vezina contention.
He was a confidant. He was the trusted confidant of Cora.
For me, it's Cam Accord. I think he's going to really turn around the special teams this year.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, Belichick defended him, by the way, at his lunch and his breakfast this week.
Belichick has defended Cam Accord, but not Mac Jones.
Correct.
And he's promoted Joe Judge. Think about that.
Yeah. But I mean, just to hang on this Bruins thing for a minute, because they got a playoff preview in Pittsburgh today, possibly.
Yep.
First round preview.
Yep.
But this team
Bruins versus Henry.
I mean, they don't have losing streaks. They have no problems other than a little bit of a power play issue. But the storyline now that will be picked apart will be, is this it for Bergeron and Krejci, who are making, I think, collectively $3.5 million this year. At least that's the cap hit. So team friendly deals for your top two centermen. This is it. I mean, every game will take the extra ounce of desperation and importance in the playoffs, because you know this is their obvious last best chance to win a cup. Thanks to Greg Hill's reporting and whatever state Thornton was in when he told him that.
Right. That was at Capitol Grill after a couple of Manhattans and some prosciutto mozzarella. But the situation here, Ken, is that you are the hockey guy, specifically on the show. I mean, I'm a big hockey guy, but you're bigger.
Mm-hmm.
The Fluto Shinzawa report a couple weeks ago went under the radar when he intimated that there could indeed be a duo goalie approach in the playoffs, that it's not set in stone, it's going to be Linus every night except for poor player and injury.
Yeah.
Is that the wrong thing or the right thing to do, or is it Monty just trying to massage it until he actually has to face it and then it'll just be Linus?
I would have a two losing streak hook with Linus. That's the hook. Two games. You go down 0-2. Then Swayman's in. Then all bets are off. Then it gets into a rotation. If not, you never rotate. So it's just, you have to approach it series by series. It's not the wrong thing. Penguins did it once. The Capitals had a little goalie rotation going on kind of before the playoffs started that year, and there have been a couple others. But for the most part, you want to ride one guy. So you give Linus the first chance. If he never stumbles, you never rotate.
Yeah, this is another masterstroke by Monty in that what would be gained, let's say Linus falls on his face or, you know, has this big losing streak or is in, whatever. If something, there's no need to make a decision until the point at which you were forced to decide.
Right. Correct.
And so why?
Nor to put yourself in a corner where you say, we don't want to rotate goalies, because then if you get in a situation when you need to rotate goalies, you look bad.
Right. And so, you know, this is not him telling Lisa Salters we're going to play both quarterbacks. It is that, you know, yeah, we could play both if that ends up being the case. I'm not stuck on one, but I'm going to tell you, Wiki's right. You're only going to see Linus in the playoffs. That's it. And sink or swim, I know people have said this is the new NHL. Yeah, in the regular season, you have load management. In the NBA playoffs, you don't have Giannis missing a game. You play every other night, and in the NHL, you're going to see one goalie. And Linus, it's not a goalie. He's going to win the Vezina. Or right?
Yeah, yes.
He's locked it up already.
I think so.
So then you're talking about the best goalie at the most important position in the playoffs. Unless he stumbles, you're not going to see Swayman. It's the dumbest thing that people yell at Wiggy about.
I mean, but you would agree, if he loses two and you're down 2-0 in the series, or you're down 3-1, then you might need to make a change.
Right. If you're down 0-2, you're probably going to lose the series anyway, which is what Wiggy's point was.
Yeah, not necessarily. I mean, you got to switch the momentum. That gets into a lot of hockey cliches in the playoffs. Let's save it.
Well, they were down 0-2 and Tim Thomas started standing on his head. They didn't change goalies against Montreal in the opening round in 2011.
True. That's true. So that will be the more interesting debate to me. How quick is the hook? And you'll have to evaluate how he's playing in those first two games. If he gets up soft goals and he's not ready, he's unproven. I'm not sure if you're aware in postseason
competition.
Yeah,
you know, he's going to leave his mark. You know, we'll figure it out.
All right, so that storyline, I think, A for the week for me, is just the future of Bergeron and Krejci and how good the Bruins are, and you take it for granted, but you shouldn't because this team's on a hell of a roll. And even though the Celtics have had an interesting week, I think Sale becomes storyline number two. He's going to go today. We are sitting here at Fenway Park, and it is a deluge and a huge Lansdowne Street puddle right outside of us, spraying water up onto the glass of the Ford Clubhouse studio.
But I have to say, great crowd. People showed up.
Yeah. But I think they're going to get it in today. And Sale goes, and you were very critical of him missing the opening day start.
Oh, don't tell me.
On his birthday. I didn't defend it. I haven't defended it. I would have liked to have seen him go. However, he pitches well today. That changes a lot of things.
It's not that. Of course. It's one of 162. Nobody said that the game one was going to dictate the rest of the season. The Red Sox, best year ever in 2018, they lost the opener, correct?
They were 0-3 or what? No,
0-2.
Last year, though. When did they start 0-3?
I don't know, but it was whatever. But they went 19-2. They lost the opener, and they won 19 of the next 20 games,
right.
I think, in 2018. The fact is that Sam Kennedy with the Greg Hill Show Thursday live at Timeout Market said, initially, Chris and Alex discussed this, and then he corrected himself and said Alex decided. If there's any part of Chris Sale, the guy that wants you to believe he's a badass that bangs Worcester's TV screens when he gets pulled from a Woo Sox game, is it any part asking out of the home opener, a guy that said with us in Springfield, it's on me this year, my hand, look at it, it feels good, I'm not going to talk about last year, talk is cheap, I need to go out and perform, I need to earn the respect of my teammates, I need to live up to the contract I signed. If your then next act is that you're pulling out of the opener because it's your birthday and it's too much pressure?
But you don't believe that, do you?
Why did he?
It was Cora's decision. Sam told you.
He said it was, initially, he said it was
Cora. He fumbled. Fumbled a word.
Okay, so you...
I don't believe that. I don't believe Chris Sale would ever as a competitor. And you know, as you said, we've talked to him, you've seen him, and you know his makeup. There's no way he would have tapped out of the opener.
No, I'm just saying that over the course of Sale's career, he has been far more David Price than Chris Sale, and yet because, unlike Price, who didn't really care to play the game and say things fans wanted to hear, David Price was a far better contract than Chris Sale's has been.
Well, it's funny you say that. Shaughnessy wrote today, I don't know if you saw his notes column.
I have not.
At this moment, Chris Sale's contract extension, inked in the sugar-high spring of 2019 when the Red Sox could have waited to measure his health, is the worst signing in Boston sports history. Worse than Ruznik and Steele, Pablo Sandoval, Carl Crawford, Matt Young, David Price, Dice K, Vin Baker, Purvis Ellison, Antoine Walker, Rick Pitino, Kevin Stevens, Marty Lapointe, or Adalius Thomas.
Oh, I mean, how do you put... I mean, Vin Baker's contract was brutal. I remember that one. Rick Pitino fired Red Auerbach, kind of a bad move. I don't know. Ruznik and Steele got $72 million and never played in the big leagues, really.
Yeah, exactly.
But
Pablo was a sideshow, my God.
Pablo's was awful. But here's the issue with Sale and why I think it's not too far off base from Dan. He has been such a tease. And you build your roster around a guy that is making $30 million to be your ace. It's $1 million to start. And he has been not available. He's basically been a non-starter since the new contract became reality.
Yeah, 11 starts.
Starts. I mean, he's made an ungodly amount of money per start.
It's incredible.
And it's just, as I said.
Like, you have a bike joke? I mean, can you get one out of the way here early?
Nope. It's not a good day to bike to work, Chris, just to get you out there. Maybe you could bike Storo. It's probably wide open for you until 11. But he's just fraudulent to me now. Like, you can't be this badass who says, get on my back, and then not pitch the home opener. Could you imagine if Roger Clemens in the 90s...
He didn't say that.
...said, Kevin Kennedy, I don't want to start. Butch Hobson, don't put me on the bump today. It's my birthday. Or Pedro Martinez or Josh Beckett or Curt Schilling. I mean, Bradford's debate with me about this a couple weeks ago on the Greg Hill Show was an all-timer where he said it's not every year. This is a common theme in Red Sox history. I went back through the opening day starters. It's almost all Hall of Famers. I mean, it literally went Clemens, Pedro, Schilling, Beckett, Lester, Price, Sale. I mean, that's not exactly, losers on that list. And then 1 year, Porcello got the start in the opener, and I think he won the Cy Young that year.
Well, it's going to happen today. He'll bounce back today. Put this team on his back.
It's indefensible, right? You can't defend.
There's no way he put this on his shoulders. I don't defend that Cora did it.
I'll never be.
Never be satisfied unless it's the opener. No, it's not that. It's his decision. He's a guy that could make a stink about it, right? Who has more power in the organization, Alex Cora or Chris Sale?
Cora.
Cora makes a tenth of what he makes.
Cora's got a lot of gravitas.
Okay.
He's got a lot of pull. And Sale doesn't have power right now. He hasn't pitched in 3 years. Who's going to listen to what he says? Cora makes the call.
In baseball, players always make the call.
Not in this case. Not when it's the worst contract in sports history.
Yeah,
Red Sox history.
I don't know if I'd go worst contract in Boston sports history. Oof.
He did hit the final out of the World Series. It seems a little harsh.
Right. He's performed. I mean, the other ones, the cash, the total money of the other ones are just not the way that the money has been spent. You know, if you're going to use dollars to dollars, you really can't compare. Vin Baker was probably $30 million. I mean, that's 1 year of Chris Sale.
Yeah. It might be Ruzne. All right, what's the worst contract in Boston sports history? 617-779-7937. And how about the Red Sox Twitter account taking your weather updates? They just tweeted this out. We are closely monitoring the forecast. Rain is expected to move out of the area this afternoon. We are still scheduled for the 4:10 first pitch. So there you go, keeping you updated all day.
Love it.
As Joe Braverman will with our Trending Now as we broadcast here from Fenway Park.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Do you still feel like you have something to prove as a manager?
Always, always. Every year. It's something that... you know, where I'm at, what I do, the way I go about my business. Some people like it, some people don't, you know, and I just got to get locked in on my group and just keep pushing them. You know, we finished last year. That's not acceptable. And, you know, I'm not here to finish last. I'm here to win championships. That's what I said in November 2nd and 3rd in 2017. I still live by that, you know, and I invest my time here. You know, the family suffers because they know that, you know, from tomorrow on is, you know, locked in. But they understand what we signed for as a family, and we enjoy it, you know, for how invested I am you know, giving my best to this group. So, you know, from a personal level, I'm ready for this. I'm ready for this regardless of the outcome. You know, I'm very prepared for this, and, you know, obviously, like I said before, if I'm in the business of the media business, I'll be saying the same thing about the group, you know, and, no doubt about it. You know, we have to be better. And we've surrounded by a lot of good teams, but I'll go back. In a personal note, yeah, I'm very prepared for this one.
Alex Cora, before the season, before the 10-9 defeat on opening night, we are at Fenway Park at our Ford Clubhouse Fenway studio. Ken and Curtis here. I still believe in Cora. Can you give me a belief meter on the coaches now? Quick belief rankings, ooh, 1 through 4.
I'm Monty, number 1 with a bullet.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, my God.
He's still an unknown. I mean, I like him. I like it. There's nothing to really criticize. But he's just, you're like sold beyond a sheet. Like, when they get into a series and he gets out-coached.
Yeah. I mean, okay, then I'll change my mind. But he is, right now, he's Cora 2018. That's what the Bruins this year are the Red Sox in 2018. And, you know, you could do Ime last year with the Celtics as analogous, but the 2018 Red Sox and the 2022-23 Bruins were wagons from the word go. The Celtics, as you and Wiggy can attest with Pasta, everything changed at the Bulls game, and then they started turning it around. So Ime had a great second half and a playoff run, but not quite the same.
But he actually did something tangible. Like, he was a hard-nut coach. He got them to buy in defensively, obviously, and that's what turned the season around. Right,
and Monty's not a hard-nut, and that's what turned the season around.
Yeah, I know, but that's what I mean. When you say, what has Monty done? Well, nothing, really.
He's created an environment where the players have thrived when they didn't or were sick of Cassidy. Just like Coughlin and other coaches wear thin at some point, Parcells or, you know, whomever, Buck Showalter, all those, like, old-school people, they have a shelf life. And Cassidy's, you know, done well in Vegas. He's not a bad hockey coach. Nobody would say that. But Monty, I have the most confidence in. God, the rest are just a crapshoot. Missoula's
this
in last.
Is what I really want. Oh, really? See, that was really what at the heart of it.
Yeah,
Missoula's. Who's last, Missoula or Belichick?
Oh, Missoula. I have.
Now, even after this week, because you called the Patriots the most dysfunctional franchise in the AL East, which is a low blow.
AFC East.
Calling them worse than the Jets. More dysfunctional than the Jets.
And then Wiggy said the NFL.
It's hyperbole. That's
in what way is that hyperbolic?
The New York Jets are the New York Jets.
That's a great take. I don't know how I can argue with that.
How many quarterbacks have they taken, including the last buffoon?
Right, and guess what they
first
did?
Pick?
So they realize that Zach Wilson isn't their guy. They don't have their head coach and owner speaking on different pages about that position. They decided, maybe stupidly, I don't like Aaron Rodgers, but they are acquiring a massive upgrade.
They are acquiring. They still have not acquired him yet.
Okay, so do you think Aaron Rodgers, if Aaron Rodgers doesn't begin the season with the Jets, I will say they are more dysfunctional than the Patriots. Okay,
the New York J-E-T-E Jets!
I mean, it's not even really close, to be honest. I mean, the Patriots right now...
Is Zach Wilson a joke?
Of course.
Is Sam Darnold a joke?
Total boob.
They were the second and third overall picks in respective drafts in the last 5 years.
Right.
You had two shots to take your franchise quarterback.
Right.
You've botched it twice.
Right.
This last one is beyond a punchline.
Tell me what's more embarrassing, that or kicking the greatest player in the history of the sport out of town.
Again, 1027, the first Brady reference.
But what's dumber? I would say it's far dumber. There's a lot of busts in the first round of the NFL draft when it comes to quarterbacks. There's only one Tom Brady, and you said, oh, don't need him. Thank you.
He chose to leave, and he...
Right. He won a Super Bowl and was second in MVP his second year.
You just sent me a video of him and the crypto guy.
I did not. That was Greg.
And I think that speaks for itself. Bill saw what was coming in Brady's future, and he said, I'm going to divest myself from this
guy.
Okay,
Bill's a Trump guy. How's that looking right now?
And by the way, he is not a Mac guy. That is the other big storyline of the week. The one thing he had to do, or could have done, he didn't have to do, at his breakfast, was give Mac Jones any degree of support. He gave him none. I mean, zero. It went the other way.
Right. Anybody who believes... So this
Mac is not going to be here to start the year.
Of course not. And here's the situation. I was thinking about this over the last couple of weeks, and I was... You and I, the summer of 2019, began working with Greg on the Greg Hill Show. Mm-hmm. And that August, 6th, 2019... Tom Brady said, ask Mr. Kraft, when he was asked about his contract. He signs the new deal, which is initially publicized as this big two-year, when in reality it was a one-year deal that allowed his exit. And then the next day he put his house on the market. And you and I were right, impression at the time, saying he's done. He's gone. He's not coming back. This is the point of no return. And right now I have that same feeling with the organization in Mac, that Bill Belichick may have him as his quarterback, but that relationship is irreparably damaged.
Well, Curran said yesterday, he said it again with Jones and Mego, it still goes back to Mac seeking advice outside the organization. That has bothered him to no end. And I would say it certainly appears like that is, you're right, that he will never again get back in Bill's good graces. The only way it works, Curtis, is if he has just delegated authority to Bill O'Brien and said, you deal with it. And there is no relationship between Bill and Mac. And
they Mac sound and Bailey Zappe will be competing for the starting job.
Yeah, well, everybody got a chance to play. We'll play the best players.
Does that sound functional to you, Ken?
It sounds dysfunctional.
Okay.
But I give it a sliver of a chance to work for 2 years.
Ken, that's not...
Coexist. There's a lot of marriages that couples don't speak.
Right. They do it for the kids.
And they do it for the kids. So Bill O'Brien's the kid, and the kid deals with Mac.
Mac Jones is the kid.
Well, I don't know. Whatever.
He's a stepdad. Who the hell knows? But the situation, Ken, is you always... This is your little sneaky argument tactic where it could work. That's not the argument right now.
No, your argument is they're dysfunctional.
Right. And you said, I give it a sliver of a hope. That's not...
The Patriots were 8-9. They fixed their biggest problem. And the Jets were 6-3 and lost, what, 7 in a row to end the year? They finished 7-10.
Okay.
They are a joke. They are a laughingstock.
They're one game worse than the Patriots.
They were 6-3... And they lost 7 of 8.
They're one game worse than the Patriots. And what was the Patriots?
They botched another franchise quarterback, and they still haven't gotten Aaron Rodgers.
Right, no, but at one point during the season, anyway, it doesn't matter. They had another second-half swoon. And here's the situation, Ken.
They should have beat Cincinnati.
They were down 22-0 at the half. They didn't show up.
Second half.
They got booed off the field. I cannot. I remember walking in Newport Beach, California, listening to you and Bradville being like, oh, they're just a win away.
They beat Miami late in the year.
Who's the quarterback? Skylar Jones.
Okay, fine.
The situation here is clear. The Jets have addressed the most important position in all of sports.
They haven't yet.
The Patriots are a dumpster fire when it comes to the treatment of the person.
They're not a dumpster fire. They are a slow-burning flame. Which Curran still thinks they're going to win 11 games, by the way.
Great. Why don't we have Curran in here?
Well, he's usually right. You're usually wrong.
What have I been wrong about with the Patriots? God, since Brady left, I've been 1,000% right. The situation here is very simple. Bill Belichick refuses to have anybody that dares question him. And that's why you have these multiple occasions where after being asked a relatively benign question, he answers without understanding just how tone-deaf he sounds, discussing the last 25 years been pretty good around here. Then he's going to call his, you know, stenographer, Jim McBride at the Globe, to tell him what he really meant after Robert Kraft bangs on his door and says, you got to fix this. He says these things, Ken, not because he's dumb, but because he's not challenged.
Well, he's challenged now by Kraft.
Power corrupts all. Absolute power corrupts absolutely. And that's what he has right
now. He does not have absolute power.
This is what's gone on with his thought process. He is so detached from the reality of the football team because he surrounds himself with Judge, Patricia, Accord, all of these bobos that will take a bullet for him. And, you know, if you really want to go national into the discourse of our country, the biggest issue around all discussion, especially political talk, is that we've found a way through podcasts and cable news that we never actually have to hear what the other side thinks about an issue. And it's the worst thing for you to do if you're ever looking to engage on a topic is to surround yourself with people that don't challenge your point of view. That's why the Greg Hill Show's good, because we have people with all different vantage points, people with different points of view. You're forced to challenge your belief and your thought process. Bill Belichick does not have any of that.
He had to clarify his comments to Jim McBride.
Right, because
he's obviously been challenged. So he's being challenged.
But what are the two?
Kraft looks good in all this in a way.
No, he doesn't.
Yes, he does.
Chris Gasper had a spectacular column yesterday about the performative nature of Robert Kraft's outrage. And he is 1,000% right. Robert Kraft, it just like with Deflategate, he stands up at the arrival of Super Bowl 49 in Arizona. I demand that Roger Goodell rescind this investigation unless he provides clear and present danger of the evidence of the football being deflated, blah, 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 blah. And then when it came time to bleep or get off the pot, he said, okay, I'll acquiesce, suspend him for 4 games. This is a guy that wants to be perceived. You know what really stuck out to me in Arizona? Robert Kraft was asked some question from a national reporter, and the national reporter began it by saying, Mr. Kraft. Mm-hmm. Something that he has been called for the most of my time watching since he bought the team in 93.
Sure.
And all of a sudden, Robert Kraft says, oh, no, 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 youngster. Mr. Kraft is my dad. Please call me Robert or Bob. And it's all of these. And his initiative that he announced about anti-Semitism, great. There is nobody that has better causes. You know, we need that type of message out there. But he releases that the day that he's meeting the media when he knows the questions are going to be difficult because the team underperformed a year after he met the media and said, if we don't win a playoff game, there will be ramifications.
Fine, but in terms of him challenging Belichick, he is speaking to the majority of his fan base right now. That's what his fans want, and he is giving it to them. He is playing and currying favor with his fan base. He has done most of what they want, right? They wanted to draft a quarterback. He pushed for that. They wanted him to get involved and get Patricia out of here. He did that. They wanted him to make Gerard Mayo the coach in waiting. He has basically done that. They wanted him to say, Bill is not here forever, and in fact, he might not be here next year if he doesn't win. He has done that. Kraft has delivered to most of his fans. Not all. I mean, it's not universal support, but he comes off looking pretty good here.
I really disagree with you. The way the roster is being...
Well, now hold it. You can't say he looks worse than Bill. I mean, Bill had a rough week. Even I'll admit.
No, I'm going to say that Robert Kraft owns the team. And the notion that there is this disconnect or divide between, like, the Lamar Jackson thing. What was that? I know it's crazy for me to defend, you know, Bill Belichick like this, but that was a total a-hole move. What was the purpose that you tell the media this?
Again, light the fire under Bill. put the onus on him.
Do you think Robert Kraft wants to give $40 million a year guaranteed to Lamar Jackson?
And it was kind of a, you'll text me kind of a brag, is what it was.
Do you think Robert Kraft wants to pay $40 million a year guaranteed to Lamar Jackson?
I do not.
So then he never wanted him, and he said it's up to Bill.
Yeah, but don't you think that goes back to the cash spending comment?
But that was it not factual?
It's factual, but it went up his caboose.
Okay, but that's good. I mean, then spend more. Why are they 28th right now?
Are they still 28th?
Yes.
Okay, so.
And the Jets are 19th, but when they get Rodgers, they'll be top 10. So you'll have.
I'm not saying it's not getting petty between Belichick and Kraft. But all I'm saying is Kraft, other than that comment, the Jackson thing, which is it's still amazing, unbelievable. He looked pretty good to most of his fans after his little chat earlier this week.
I think it's all, it's the zero impact. It's a bunch of, it's a word salad with no meat in it.
Well, no, because he did change the coordinator. And maybe Bill wouldn't have done that without Kraft pushing.
So do you think that if it wasn't Bill O'Brien and it was the latest, you know, offshoot of the LaFleur family or a McVay disciple that Bill had never met, do you think he would have acquiesced and allowed him to be on the staff? Or it was a friend of Bill. When Bill Belichick was asked why he hired Bill
convenient
O'Brien.
Convenient happy medium.
So Tom Curran asked Bill Belichick at the owners' meetings, what about Bill O'Brien made him an attractive hire? And he said, no. And he's like, well, can you give me one thing that he does that you like? And he's like, well, I've known him a long time. That was his answer.
Yeah, well, I think Bill kind of had it in mind before the year began, but at least give Kraft this. He prevented Bill from being stubborn to the point of sticking with Patricia another year.
Did Bill Belichick openly support Mac Jones?
He did early.
No.
Before the year began.
This offseason where you're saying Robert Kraft is stuck. So then what power does he have if Bill won't even support the most important player on the roster?
Who, Bill?
Bill Belichick will not openly say that Mac Jones is the quarterback of the Patriots.
For now, he's still here. I guess that's the best I can say on that.
But that's what I'm talking about, is at the very minimum.
It's a problem. It's a definite problem.
If you're seeking to recoup assets in return for Mac Jones, if he's not the guy, Bill Belichick has basically taken his value and put it in the trash.
All right, 617-779-7937. What do you think of the week of Kraft and Belichick? Who comes off looking bad, if not worse? Let's go to Rob in New Hampshire first up today on Ken and Curtis. Hi, Rob.
Hey, how you doing?
All right.
I'm a longtime morning show listener and really enjoy you on there, Curtis, the whole crew. But I always think you've got some well-thought-out opinions and takes on there.
Thank you.
So I'm just calling because the contrast in Bill Belichick making comments about the question when Cam Newton was here, who's your starting quarterback? He would just go off on how Cam's our starter, Cam's our starter, Cam's our starter. Wouldn't even allude to a competition when they drafted Mac Jones. And I think if you heard that sound back to back, it'd be crazy. And then I think it goes all the way back to that time, because I don't think Bill Belichick wanted to draft Mac Jones from jump. If you see the footage in the draft room at that time, it's Bill basically saying, so are we going to pick this guy when he's number one on their board, when that's not really what Bill normally does? He doesn't ask permission. He just kind of picks somebody down in the middle of the pack that he likes as a player and picks him. And I think that's why they didn't make a move in that draft, because he wanted him off the board. He didn't want to take Mac Jones. So I think he knows and took him. And I think ever since then, if Bill Belichick is anything, he's spiteful. Terrific coach, terrific longtime coach, but he's spiteful. And if something's not his idea, he makes it hard for it to happen.
Yeah. I agree 100%, Rob. Good and, point. Of course, Curtis, as you know.
You called that.
The
you
day
were...
after the draft, who was calling that out?
Ken Laird.
And, we talked for a long time about where the rift started between Bill and Tom. That very well may be the start of a rift between Kraft and Belichick, which they've coexisted to this point, and I don't think Kraft would ever fire him.
No.
But you never know.
The beginning of the rift existed at the conclusion of the 2020 season when Tom Brady won a Super Bowl. And Robert Kraft listened to Bill and, as I've said 1,000 times, made a sound judgment regarding the long-term efficacy of a coach versus a quarterback in terms of your brain will not deteriorate at the same level as your athletic acumen and skill on the field. Mm-hmm. He was wrong, but Brady's a unicorn.
Yeah, but I think they were. I think they were in lockstep on that one.
I do not. Yes. I mean, at the end of the day, Robert Kraft made the decision that you can't have this guy here forever. And the thing, anyway, we can have to go back down there. But yes, I believe that was the beginning of it. And the comments that Rob just made was that obviously Bill was effusive in his praise of Cam Newton. And Cam Newton, say what you will, wasn't a great quarterback, but the players loved him.
Well, I mean, Cam's our starting quarterback. I think I've said that.
I mean,
if he said that about Mac, my God, it would be at this point it'd be a shock.
If you want to talk about where the chasm began, not to pat myself on the back, but it was a simple question. After Zappi had performed well, I asked Bill Belichick that Monday morning, when Mac is healthy, is it his job? And he refused to answer that.
Oh, so you think Kraft is so attached to Mac, that's what's really...
Well, I was talking about the Mac-Bill rift, but yes, and Kraft, because it was Kraft's decision.
I get you.
But that began this process where it's so clear that Mac Jones was screwed last year. And so Mac Jones, who is seeing now Daniel Jones get a $160 million deal because his offensive-minded coach maximized his opportunity.
Right.
Now he has generational money. Mac Jones, in his second year after taking a team to the playoffs following the Cam Newton debacle, has his head coach give him two coaches that are totally ill-prepared for the job they hold.
Right, but now the hope is that Bill O'Brien is Brian Daboll.
But this is what I'm talking about. And then Mac has the unmitigated gall, the temerity to go out and ask people, is this normal that my coach doesn't know what to do if there's a blitz?
That's a no-no. He wouldn't ask somebody else. Now, did you hear the exchange from Belichick's breakfast chat about the cash spending thing? I put it together. There were like three or four questions about it in a little montage. I want to play that for you next because it hasn't gotten a lot of play. Most of the focus has been on Bill, say, in the last 25 years.
Right.
But it was interesting because at the time he said it, you and I disagreed. I thought it meant they were going to spend this offseason. I don't know what you thought. You thought he was taking a shot at Kraft.
It was just clearly that the cap is crap.
Okay, well, I mean, it is something to listen to it again because they haven't spent, not much, and he addressed it at the lunch and the breakfast this week. We'll play it for you next. It is the Ken and Curtis Show coming to you live from Fenway Park on our Lansdowne Street Studios, Ford Clubhouse Fenway Studio.
Ken, you did a great job with all the setup here. It sounds good, looks good. Andrew's here. And go back at the studio.
Yeah.
And we have, I think it's like standing room only on Lansdowne right now. So if you come by, make sure you're ready to wait in line.
And I just brewed my first cup of Joe here in the remote studios. And as you said, great line, a cup of Joe before Joe.
Right.
Joe and Will today, 4:10 on your first pitch across the Shaw's and Snow Market, WEI Red Sox.
I don't mean this to come off pompous, but your upbringing in the sticks of Western Pennsylvania gives you true joy over the simplest things. Uber Eats really shocks you, and the ability to get a cup of Joe at a Keurig machine.
I'm a simple man, Curtis.
You are. Simple taste.
Okay, now, simple Bill Belichick in his approach to spending.
Yep.
They spent a lot a couple years ago. 3 years ago now? 21 offseason?
Yeah.
They got a couple pieces. They got Juju. They got Gesicki. They got a tackle, Riley Reiff. I mean, it's not like they've spent no money.
I got James a Riley Reiff jersey. He loves it.
He's going to be a fan favorite. Don't you knock that.
Riley Reiff.
But he got, Belichick was asked earlier this year, before the end of the season, about their low cash spending total. Well, he wasn't asked about that. He used that as an excuse for basically why haven't you performed? You spent all this money. And he said, to paraphrase, we didn't spend that much money. We're 27th in cash spending, which you loved. I mean, that's like your favorite clip of the year.
Well, it basically proves me prescient everything I've said that they haven't been spending, and you would be your retort every time I said that. So Robert Kraft is cheap. Are you saying Robert Kraft? Yep, he has been. They're 27th.
Not in the 21 offseason, and I thought they were going to really spend a lot this offseason, but they haven't yet. Now, here's Bill was pressed on that on a couple of questions at the breakfast at the owners' meeting this week.
Bill, at the press conference you did the day after the season ended, you mentioned that over the past 3 years, you guys are among the lowest spending teams in the NFL. I was wondering, was that a lament or was that we've been fiscally responsible? I think there's been a lot of conjecture as to what the point of that was. I know it's just a fact, but what was the relevance of that?
Well, I think we've been pretty competitive every year that I've been here with the Patriots. That's our overall plan, and so I expect it to continue that way.
And to do that?
I think the teams have managed pretty well over the last 20 however many years, so think we'll continue managing it in the way we've been competitive every year. And I expect that we'll continue to be competitive.
So the notion of spending and, okay, where the Patriots fit in the grand scale of how much this year, how much that year, and the average.
My comment was a correction. So I was asked a question about high cash spending and how high it was and some other things went along with it. And the fact is that's just inaccurate. I mean, in a Polaroid shot, yes, but anybody that knows anything about the cap understands that it's spread out over a period of time. So you have high cash spending, then you have low cash spending. You can look at every team in the league, and there's no difference between our team and any other team. If it's high, it's going to be low. If it's low, then eventually it's going to be high.
I'm sorry I didn't catch the context on that. Previously, I didn't know that, that was what led into the comment from you.
Bill, going back to your comment about the cash spending, you said you were 27th before. You're, I think, about 28th now. Is what you guys spend, do you determine that or the crowd?
I never said that. What did I say about now? I never said that.
No. Previously, during the season, you at the end of the season, you said lowest.
That was about the previous 3 years at that point in time. I don't even know where we are now. Okay, so it doesn't really matter. Okay. We'll spend to the cap. We'll have a competitive team. That's really... And anybody who knows anything about the cap, which I'm sure you've studied it, knows that over a period of time, it evens out. So... That's all I got to say about it.
Would you like the ability to spend more? Do you have that ability from ownership to spend more if you want to?
I've said all I'm going to say about it. Like, we spend to the cap every year.
So he gets a little defiant about it. We spend to the cap every year, and obviously... You know,
right, but that's the whole thing. This is the petulant child in Bill.
But is he upset at Kraft or not? Like, I don't get it.
He is. He expressed that. He was admonished for being so transparent and having that number at the tip of his tongue. Because guess what happened? That was so illuminating. So Karen Grigian at the Herald asks Bill at the end of the season about their exorbitant free agent spending issues 2 years prior.
Right.
And he felt threatened as the person charged with running the football operations department. So instead of taking accountability, he pointed out that they hadn't spent much cash over the last 3 years.
But almost in a way to say, you should praise me. Look at what we've done without spending.
But it doesn't, this is what happens when you question someone who professes to be this secure person, but is in fact deeply insecure. Because the second someone confronts Bill with a stat, that's real. He has at the ready something to refute that immediately to get and deflect the attention off of himself. In that conversation, Bill Belichick knew the exact numbers of where they ranked and volunteered the information to the media when he was threatened by Karen because of her report.
Yeah, but why would he feel threatened by that? That's a reflection on Kraft,
not
him.
No, she said that you spent and that you didn't get the bang for your buck. So he corrected her and said, we really haven't been spending much.
Right.
Then he is confronted about the situation now, and he all of a sudden has amnesia about how much money they've spent this offseason.
Yeah.
Because
it didn't. They've spent to the cap.
But that's why that he's switching the terms. Because he can't take accountability. This is the problem.
By the way,
he doesn't think anything's going wrong.
Similar great moment, Tom Warner joined Gresham Fauria live at the Cask before the opener, and they were telling him, you know, showing him the list of why, you know, how, it's surprising to see you guys 17th in spending in MLB, and he said, that's not right. That's a garbage list. We're top 10. It's almost defiant beyond the actual realities of it from multiple people here in the local area. Anyway, I did find that interesting, that whole exchange. So Bill wants... He feels they'll be competitive with what they've spent, and basically it's just him, as you say, being defiant. We've managed things pretty well here over the last 20, 25 years.
Well, also, it's not been 25 years, and so he exaggerated there. And Bill knows better than anybody. Do you remember his spouse on Instagram when the Bucks beat the Saints mm-hmm. to advance to the NFC title game,
yeah.
crediting the defense, ripping Brady? They know intricately the dynamic at play here and what the conversation is now and will continue to be if the Patriots don't win again, which is why you get that air of defiance.
What a season it's going to be. I mean, I know the Celtics and the Bruins are in great positions to run, make a run, but the Patriots are just so captivating in the way this thing is playing out in the last couple years.
But if you thought the Brady divorce was crazy, and it was, if we are headed towards a Kraft-Belichick divorce, it is going to... knock it out of the water. It is going to be Meghan Markle on steroids. It is going to be the biggest soap opera. And you're watching it
They're
right
already
now.
Sleeping in separate bedrooms. It feels like they have
separate. Oh, my God. They have separate bank accounts, definitely.
All right, we got to take a break. At the Ford Clubhouse Fenway Studio, Ken and Curtis Show until 1, Arcan at 1 o'clock.
After the second year, if you felt like you got the best bang for your buck.
We were 27th in the league in cash spending.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.